What happens in ecstasis, the ecstatic moment of experiencing God in your body and the realization of being what it means to be that temple, or what it means to be the spiritual cohabitation with God, what happens in that ecstatic experience is that your identity begins to shift. When the identity begins to shift, it's no longer hanging on to that past memory and then projecting or trying to construct something into the future, but you actually enter into what is called the deep now, or this eternal moment. And so now, instead of living, having these transient experiences of flow, now you can actually begin to experience flow as this, it's this eternal moving and within the stillness of doing. And so now the doings become this effortless expression of the divine. The doings literally just become that sparkle. They're effortless parts of who I am, effortless expressions of the divinity that I've experienced and now I'm exploring, but I'm like stuck in the deep now as opposed to living in the memory and then projecting that into the non-existent future. Again, a lot of times this is not information. So right now I'm not sharing information with you. So shut off your mind. If you're if you're hearing this in your mind, you're not even listening yet. You're supposed to be hearing it here in spirit. Your mind can't comprehend what's being said. So in the mind, all you're going to do is you're going to be like, yeah, he's full of it. In your mind, yeah, that's awesome. And you're going to get some sort of information. And you're going to start saying, I know that, even though you're not experiencing it. I don't care if you know it. I want you to experience it. And see, the experience comes as I hear. This is why Jesus always said, he who has ears, let him hear. You have ears, but you do not hear. He was looking at the Pharisees. He's like, man, you got ears, but you're not hearing. He's like, you're studying the scriptures because in them you think you find life, but life stands here right before you. And you don't even notice me. Like, I am life. I am life. I am truth. I am the way. You're not even recognizing. You're not even noticing me. And the reason why he's able to say that is because he was so absorbed in the deep. Now, eternity is this realm within. And when I say within, I'm not talking about within the physical constructs of that physical nature that you've identified as. I'm talking about in spirit, which is actually the cosmic glue that holds everything together. This is the reason why trees can speak to you without having to take mushrooms or trip out on acid to hear it. Oh boy. You guys with me? Yeah, like two of you are. Holy Spirit. So we're beginning to recognize some of these things. Some of what really has happened and what I've realized is that every like powerful move of God that you've ever seen took place in ecstasis. Like, there's never been a powerful move of God that didn't happen when somebody was, like, not out of their mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about Samson, right? We were talking about this the other day. Think about Samson. This dude was high, right? Samson, he's got his issues. He's got some problems. He's got some issues in his life that he's dealing with. And see, all through, like, just so to break this down for you, when you read the Bible and you look at the Old Testament and the Bible, you're experiencing what you would typically hear as the Spirit comes upon someone. And you're hearing, like, the Spirit came upon them. And what you were taught within, well, I know what I was taught in Bible college and seminary and within all the years of growing up within the Christian church was that the reason why the Spirit came upon him is because he hadn't been poured out yet. Well, listen, I've got great news. This is BS. Because the Spirit has always been poured out. Evidence is you are alive. You are a spirit. You cannot be born in the image and likeness of Spirit and then not be full of Spirit. Hello? You've always been one with him. The alienation or separation never actually existed except in our own mind, Colossians 1:21. So when the Bible actually talks about the Spirit coming upon someone, it was these flow moments, these moments of flow. It was just humanity was just like they are today, no different than they are today. They were just experiencing these deep moments of the now, these deep moments of ecstasis, but they were very transient. And so instead of them being this eternal this eternal perpetual flow. It was just this transient flow. It was very temporal in nature. So think about Samson, man. With all his little problems, he has the audacity. Like, so let me describe this for you here. In flow state, in ecstasis, the parts of your brain that register fear and self-consciousness shut down. Yeah. So we think of self-consciousness, you equate self-consciousness with ego. Ego is that self-conscious part of you where you're seeing yourself. It's this perceived idea, self-perception, this idea of who you are. And that's the reason why it doesn't matter what you physically look like. You can look in the mirror and think you're ugly. You could be physically beautiful, look in the mirror and think you're ugly. Or you could be ugly and like physically not real super attractive and look in the mirror and be like, damn, my God. And like really feel like you're super attractive. Because it's all about perception. It's about this perception, right? So we equate that with ego. And so we oftentimes have all these deep-rooted feelings. So ego is very offendable. Ego is very frustrated. Gets frustrated real easy. Ego is always trying to do something to achieve or to get credit or to, you know, it's always wanting credit for everything that it does. It's always fighting. It's always arguing. It always thinks it's right. These are things we associate with ego. In ecstasis, this place of ego is so diminished or absolutely gone. Like, depends upon how deep in ecstasis you are. But there's no room for ego. For instance, how many of you guys have ever experienced like an authentic trance where you entered in such a trance where there was no more perception of self? Yeah. Several things take place within mm-hmm. these trances, right? So time is absolutely gone. Time is suspended completely. Yeah. It's suspended. There is no time. So it either like slows dramatically down into rewind, like it's almost going backwards, or it speeds way up. So I've had so many trances and so many times. There are moments where I literally entered into a trance. It was a 15-minute trance. I enter in. Before I entered in, I knew what time it was. I enter into this trance, and this was before 2010. I would enter into a trance. It's a 15-minute trance. I felt like I was in this place, what felt like hours and hours and hours. But I would, you know, it's kind of come back into my self-awareness. And in that self-awareness, I'd look at the clock and it was like 15 minutes. Time was suspended. What felt like hours was actually only 15 minutes. Or the exact opposite of that, there were moments where I entered into a trance and I thought I was only in there for 15 minutes. I mean, like I've told the story to you guys before. I did that several times. This is probably one of the moments where it was, you know, I've done it in cars. I was being transported in Alabama. I think it was in Alabama. And they were driving me from the event that I just taught at to a home where we were like doing a little after party. And I sat down in the car and I was gone. I don't remember anything that took place. As a matter of fact, the only thing that I recall was me actually being in Colorado at the same time. But that's a different story for another time. I'll share that another time. Get to the house. Like, I wake up in the car. The party's been going on for like an hour and a half. I tranced out in the car. These poor guys were like doing this after party for me. I tranced out in the car during the 20-minute ride from where we were going, from where I was teaching to the after party. And I missed an hour and a half of the after party and 20-minute car ride with these guys because I slipped into a trance. I felt like it was really short. I felt like it was probably like 10 minutes. When I woke up in the car, I was like, where's everybody at? What's going on? I didn't even know where I was. Like, where are we at? Had no concept or clue. One time I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to take my dog out for a walk. This was many, many, many years ago. I'm standing in the backyard, go out into a trance. It's like, I think it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Slip into a trance. Felt like I was holding the leash. Felt like I was out there with the dog for about 15 minutes. When I came out of the trance, it was like the sun was up. Yeah, I had been standing in the backyard holding my dog's leash for hours, just standing there like the gaper holding the leash for hours. And I thought it was like just 15 minutes. I was like, oh my God, my neighbors probably think I'm insane. You know, like, what is that guy doing? So, but time is suspended in this place of ecstasis. It just is. And if you've experienced trance, so Peter goes up on the rooftop. And what happens, he's going up on the rooftop, literally, if he's waiting for a meal to be made for him, and he slips into ecstasis, right? Right? The move of God takes place. Powerful, we'll maybe talk about that later, but he slips into this moment. Time is completely suspended. Slow down, speed up, but it's suspended. And what ends up happening is, if when you start living in that place, it's not something that is transient and that it gets suspended, but you actually come into the realization that time is simply psychological. And when you're not living in your mind, but you're living in ecstasis, you no longer really have a concept or clue of time. Time is, do we really know it's what year it is? I mean, really, what year really is it? Do we really know? I mean, we don't, right? Like time is, there's two different types of time. There's calendar time, there's psychological time. The vast majority of people lives caught up in psychological time. Their body is like this, has this like eternal clock, and their mind is this clock that is continually functioning at psychological time. I've talked about that in the Immortality 3 series. I've talked about that many, many other times. I'm not going to get down the road any further tonight. I mean, today or whatever time it is. But what we're doing, right, and what we're experiencing is, we're literally experiencing, typically, we're in bondage to this psychological time. And there's nothing wrong with calendar time. Nothing wrong with using, like, hey, we said we're going to meet here at 10 a.m. for this online flow event. Great. Awesome. 10 a.m. It gives us an idea on the calendar of when we're going to get together. That's wonderful. There is a moment in humanity coming where we're going to be so in tune, in union with one another, and it'll happen where you won't even have to communicate. You just show up at the same time knowing that it's happening. But I mean, that's that, you know, that as the more conscious you become of who you really are, and the less you conscious you are of that perceived notion of self, that constructed notion, that constructed idea of who you are, the more that's going to end up taking place and what you're going to experience. That's the real highlight. So just recognize a couple things. First of all, when time is suspended, you're no longer constructing a future event based on your past. So I'm sure Samson had gotten into a bunch of fights in his day. Now, Samson did not have super, he did not have, he was not, we got this idea of Samson like he was bodybuilder. No. He wasn't. Samson was just like a normal dude. He was a hippie. He couldn't even cut his hair. Like, he was this normal dude. He's like this hippie guy running around enjoying life. Like, whoa, guys. Like, hey, Delilah, you're awesome. Let's hang out. That's Samson. Okay? He's not like this bodybuilder posing and like, ah, he's not that guy. So I'm sure he had probably even been beaten up by bullies at some point or something. Like, I'm sure he had gotten into fights and he's won some fights and he's lost some fights or he's experienced that. What we do is, if you've gotten into a fight and you lost a fight, you end up taking that memory and you construct all future confrontation with that. This is the reason why people hate, I deal with confrontation every single day, and it does not bother me in one way or another. I don't feel that it's confrontation. It only feels like confrontation to everybody else. But what ends up happening is, you have this loss or this feeling. This is why in sports, flow is huge in sports. As a matter of fact, when you hear interviews of basketball players or football players, they're saying, well, we're just going to be present. We're just focused on this one team. Or we're just trying to be present right now. Because they've actually studied flow states, and they're trying to help their basketball players. Like, have you ever heard of the zone in basketball? They call it the zone. That's when I've played a lot of basketball, and I've been in the zone where you feel like you can't miss. The basketball hoop is like huge. You can pull up from half court and you're just draining stuff. You just can't miss. You're in the zone. You're doing crazy stuff. You're creatively functioning at such a high level that it feels like you're exponentially better than you've ever been. It's a zone. This is a flow state. And so what happens is, all of those missed shots that you actually remember and are now projecting into your future are gone. When you're in the zone, you know you're going to make the shot. Because you're so present, you're so present that your mind, the memory part of your brain, the memory part of your mind is shutting down. And so the last time you missed that free throw or the last shot, the last game-winning shot that you missed is no longer relevant. You're not using that information to construct your future event with. Instead, now you're just present here. You're just here now, which wow. in reality is the only place you can really be. So I'm just defining for you when somebody says they're in the zone, or like if you're a musician, you're in the pocket or whatever. That's what these people mean. These are various flow states. And I love how in the sports world, listen, if you are an athlete and you want to really recognize what it looks like to be in the zone, you don't have to go through sports psychology to recognize that. It doesn't have to be this transient thing where only a handful of games that you're actually experiencing that. You can actually experience that every game. I mean, you were talking about productivity. You can experience that every single game of your existence, every single game of your career. If you just learn how to live out of this place of stasis, recognize this is recognizing awakening to who you really are and your identity that's found in Christ, okay? So, Samson is not projecting his past information. If he had, Samson's walking around, it's like, whoa, guys. Plays a little prank. 1,000 Philistines, 1,000 men are trying to kill Samson. They're not getting into a fight. I'm talking about trying to kill Samson. 1,000. And Samson's so high, he thinks he can beat them. No. One man is so high, he thinks he's going to be able to kill him. So the spirit comes upon him. Now, we act like that was all divine. It was a combination. The spirit comes upon him. He's like, whoa, dude, there's a jawbone of a donkey. And he just grabs the jawbone. These guys got weapons. They're trained to kill. Hippie Samson, this Nazarite, grabs the jawbone of a donkey. He's like, let's roll. And like, he's so high, he's not projecting this past information of defeat. All the areas of your brain that project fear, I mean, if 3 men showed up at your door and was like threatening to kill you, you'd freak out. If one person did it, typically people freak out. The brain goes into this flight or fight mode, and both function out of fear. Fight and flight function from this place of fear. Samson had no fear. Why? Because there was no self. In those moments, those high intense moments of ecstasis, there is no self to even perceive. So there's no more fear. So X Games guys that are pulling 240-foot gap jumps don't think that they can die. In that moment, death is not even real to them. There's not a perception of self that can even observe death or think about it. Like, they're just in the zone to the degree that it's gone. Matter of fact, they have to have people around them to kind of rear them back sometimes and say, don't do that in those flow states. To try to help keep them safe. So Samson grabs the jawbone, though, and he's like, let's go, boys. And it's like, yeah. And he goes and he kills. Think about this for a second. I think you've maybe missed the story a little bit. But he kills 1,000 men. With a jawbone. How high do you have to be to like even begin to think about trying to fight with 1,000 men? I mean, 5 guys maybe, right? 5 guys, like if you know Kung Fu, if you're like the Matrix and you know Kung Fu and you know how to, maybe 5 dudes, but like 1,000? Nah, man, come on. Nah, you gotta be out your mind. You gotta be so high to even begin. But see, the thing is, rational processing shuts down, right? So all the rational processing shuts down, and now he's just in this fearless, there's no self here to even be conscious of. He was probably like warping in and out, trans-relocating, and like one of these Marvel superhero comics, and he's like pulling, pow! And then all of a sudden he's gone, he's showing up somewhere else, and he's like, he's tapping into like this ancient knowledge of Kung Fu and stuff that he's there. You know? Now, we've heard the story was just like, yeah, the supernatural strength, but I mean, I don't care what kind of supernatural strength you have, there's 1,000 dudes over there trying to kill you. This ain't even about supernatural strength anymore. You got to be like tapped into some sort of crazy. Think about the exponential. Like, he would have to 1,000 times 1,000. Like, the exponential potential that he was tapped into in that moment was 1,000 times himself to be able to take on 1,000 men. 1,000 times himself. Like, think about that. Wild. That's ecstasis. So when you think about Samson, that's ecstasis. Like, he enters into it. Now, okay, they finally capture Samson. We know the story. They got him chained up. He's this big mocking. They're mocking him and whatever. And he's like, oh, God. So God actually comes in, and he enters into this concentration ecstasy, and he actually thinks that he's capable of, like, with his bare hands, tearing down these massive pillars that hold this entire building up. Like, think about how high you have to be to even try that. Like, no, I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious right now. Think about how high you would have to be to even think that you would. When I'm saying high, recognize what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being out of your mind. That in this place of being out of your mind, it's not just euphoria. It's just not this just euphoric state of bliss and of harmony and of ecstasy. It's not just that. It's like your potential is amplified beyond imagination. All the areas of your mind that are creative start exploding. Your body is not just exploding with ecstasy, but you actually lose consciousness of that physical form. This is where all trans relocation, bilocation, spirit travel, popping in and out begin to happen. Samson is out of his mind. He's high. When I say high, I just realize I'm talking about ecstasis. That's all I'm talking about. It's the high life. Right? Think about Gideon for a second, because Gideon is this coward. Like, he is afraid. The typical expression, Gideon's typical expression and what he had defined himself was little, afraid, miserable, I can't really do anything, on the lowest of the low. And God comes to Gideon. The Spirit comes upon Gideon. He enters into ecstasis, right? And in that moment of ecstasis, there's three nations are trying to destroy Israel. Three nations. And then he's got like these like 10,000 men or whatever, however many, I don't remember the story all the way, but he's got like 10,000 men, Gideon does. And he's like, man, we can't take on three nations. And he's scared, and the Bible says, like, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. Ecstasis. Bam! He goes out of his mind. And he's so far out of his mind that he's like, yeah, this is probably too many men to go to battle with. We should probably reduce our numbers. And so then, you know, the story, he reduces the numbers of men that he's going to battle against three nations with, down from like 10,000 to like 400. He's so high, he thinks his odds are better with 400 than with 10,000. There's no rash. Like, you are, like, everybody had to be like, Gideon is tripping balls over here. Like, we don't know, like, if he started eating mushrooms or, like, what he got into, but he's tripping. Like, he's telling all these guys to go home. There's three nations, and he's telling everybody to go home. And he's like, hey, you guys go home too. Yeah, we don't need you any either. He's like, yeah, there's just three nations over there, that's all. So Gideon goes from being this coward, this guy that's completely fearful, to having no perception of self. Listen, in order to do that, you have to be out of your mind. You don't do that if you're functioning out of your mind, in your mind, or in the cognitive reasoning of the brain, you're not doing that, right? No, you're trying to go to all your allies and get all of them to help out too. But he reduces his army to 400 men. And he's like, all right, guys, let's get some bowls and pots and pans and get some trumpets, some clanging cymbals. That's what we're going to go to war with, boys. Get your forks and your... And they're like, what? Not only did he reduce the army to 400 men, but now he's going to war with some trumpets and some pots and pans and stuff. Like, how high is Gideon in this moment? Like, I'm serious. He's in such a... How high is he? I know we read these stories and we don't think Gideon's high. We're just like, the Spirit came upon him. No, when the Spirit comes upon you, what ends up happening is this is the world you were supposed to live in. This is the realm you were created to live effortlessly in. The problem is we've gotten so caught up in living cognitively as this perceived self that we've missed this realm altogether. And so all of a sudden now they're living out of the potential of the divine. In those moments when the Spirit came upon them, they were living in their natural potential. Everything else was just this limited version of the divine potential, of the sparkle that you were born to exemplify. And so here Gideon is, and he takes this 400 men, and they actually, without having to even fight the armies, they run. They, like, kill themselves. Like, all this chaos happens. He's like, hey, we're just going to go blow our trumpets. And I don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be cool. And they, like, blow these trumpets, and next thing you know, like, they went. Gideon was high. This was like a flow state. But in between the story, you see him coming in and out of his right, in and out of his mind. And, like, sometimes he's in his mind, he's like, what am I doing right now? Why am I doing this? Like, what in the world? And then he puts this, he's trying to make a decision, and he's putting the fleece before God. He's going in and out of his mind, and God's like, oh my God, would you just stay here for a minute? I'm telling you, it'll be so much easier than all the effort and work you're trying to. Would you just stay here with me? You know what I mean? Like, come on, dude. Like, stasis has caused so many moral dilemmas. Right? So stasis has caused so many societal moral dilemmas. It's not in religious moral dilemmas. It's not funny. Like, for instance, think about Isaiah. Isaiah the prophet is told by God to walk around naked for 3 years. He's so high, he thinks it is going to be, like, socially accepted to walk around naked for 3 years. Like, he's so high. Like, this is not socially acceptable in this culture to do. And he's like, hey, guys. And he shows up to the next synagogue party. He's like, hey, guys. And he's just butt stark naked, out of his mind. Like, he's high. You gotta be high, right? Like, I mean, how high do you have to be? Like, to be, like, there's no self-perception anymore. All that insecurity and fear that would go along with doing that, like, vanished. And he's just, like, walking around naked 3.5 years or whatever. And then, to make matters worse, he's like, listen, I want you to, like, lay on a rock for 3 years naked. And so, like, he's laying, like, who does these types of things? Like, that's not just some sort of crazy prophet. No. You crazy prophet, you do that for one night. Not for 3.5 years. You know what I mean? He tripped out for 3.5 years. He tripped out in such a way in ecstasis for 3.5 years. Isn't that amazing? Or how about, like, societal morality was, like, completely in turmoil because this was a guy they, like, honored and at the same time wanted to kill. On the one hand, it's like, wow, this is Prophet Isaiah. On the other hand, it's like, we want to kill this guy. He's a little psychotic. Have you realized that, like, everybody that's been really productive or done anything, like, of great value, whether that's biblically or not, has been a little bit, has always been viewed as a little off the rocker. Right?
We're a lot off the rocker.
Yeah. So, I think it was Steve Jobs said something like one of his three best things that he ever did was take acid or something like that. LSD. He said one of the, like, three best things he's ever did was take LSD. But see, all LSD is doing is helping you tap into the imagination. And it actually amplifies the imagination. And so you become more creative. You have that without having to take LSD. Like, Jesus makes LSD look like a cup of decaf coffee here. Like, the Holy Spirit makes LSD look like a cup of decaf coffee. You have that without having to take that stuff. And we have so many stories. Ezekiel, same thing, man. But think about the moral dilemma, like the religious moral dilemma that's involved with Ezekiel. Because he's told to bake food over his own feces. This goes against Jewish law. Like the Jewish law of the day. This isn't even just societal morality. Like, no, you don't do that, bro. But this is like the Jewish more like, because back then they would bake, like it would take like old dried dung and they would use that to start fires and stuff. But like this wasn't like cow dung or like sheep poo that had been sitting there in the field for 6 months. This was human feces. And this was not only societal morality was being like they toe over the line, but the religious morality was absolutely like they were struggling because the law was like, this is what made you unclean. Like you don't touch that stuff and you don't do that. This is unclean. The thing about it, you couldn't even eat certain animals because they were unclean. You couldn't, there's lots of stuff. You couldn't have sex with a woman on her period because that was unclean. Like there's so many things that you couldn't do that was make you unclean. And it would really like a leper, you couldn't go near a leper. You'd be unclean, or somebody that was sick, or like, there's so many, all the crazy law. And imagine Ezekiel, he's like baking food over his own human feces. How out of your, how high do you have to be like, I should start a fire with my poop? Right? Isn't that crazy to think about? But it wasn't just like these morality of the day that was being really that was like there was a struggle with, but like for real, this cat was popping and trans relocating. He's so far out of his mind, he's like baking bread over his own feces 1 minute, and the next minute he's like by the river Tabar, like for 7 days out of his mind. If you read Ezekiel in the Living Bible, like the paraphrased Living Bible, it is amazing. And it's like every other chapter is like, and Ezekiel was pulled out of his body. Like Ezekiel was pulled out by his hair and placed by the river. He was like being trans-relocated all over the earth. And then he would be in the, and then he'd find himself somewhere and he was so out of his mind. Listen, people are always coming to me and asking me questions about trans relocation. Listen, if you really want to experience trans relocation, you'll stop asking the question. You'll start, because the truth is, when you're that far out of your mind, you're no longer asking the question. It just happens. You got to be out of your mind. For you to recognize and start experiencing things, you got to be out of your mind. Like, they happen either because God takes you into trance state or because you're living in trance state. One of those two things is true. Right? But there's been so many of these experiences, and I'm just sharing some biblical encounters that happened that were all about ecstasis, and whether that was like towing the line of societal morality or like absolutely violating it completely, with being high enough to take on 1,000 men that were coming against you, you know? Like there's one story of Samson where it says he caught like 1,000 foxes and then like tied their tails together. Who does that sort of thing? If you actually went out, how long would it take to capture 1,000 foxes? Like, I don't know the answer to that question because I've never even trapped one fox, but I'm pretty sure you got to be pretty freaking high to even like creatively come up with this thought process. Like, I'm going to catch foxes, tie their tails together, light them on fire, and send them into the city. Like, what? And he's laughing about it. Like, he's literally thinks it's like a practical joke. He's like, whoa, bros, look at those foxes run. He's high.
Don't forget the foreskins.
Well, we're not going to go down that road. So many examples. Or what about Philip? Like, Philip is cruising along, and then bam! Popped out of his body, popped out of the geographic location he's in, and now he's in a completely different location, and he's like walking along by this chariot. He starts sharing the gospel with the chariot, and then bam! He's popped out. Now he's in a city, trans-relocating all over the earth. Like, these things were happening, and it was like just, oh, here I am. Oh. Crazy stuff happens in ecstasis. Or how about Elijah? He's so high, he thinks he can outrun a chariot. This old prophet with this huge beard, and you think of in the sense of like walking along, he He's up on the mountain with God, high as a kite in the presence of God. Like, he is absolutely ecstatic, living in this euphoric state of perfect bliss and tranquility. And the Bible says the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he actually started running, and he outran a chariot with horses to the city. He ran 20 miles. And so typically the chariots would ride at about 20 miles an hour. And so it would take the chariot about 1 hour to get from where he was on Mount Horeb, I believe, into the city that he was going to. And so he ran at over 20 miles an hour for an extended period of time. The fastest guys alive can run that fast, but for short periods of time. Like short bursts, like they're running at just over 30 miles an hour, but it's for like 100 yards. It's not for an hour straight. Elijah is not like a triathlete. He's not an Ironman. He's not trained for this sort of thing. He doesn't spend all of his time running marathons, guys. This is not Elijah. He's a prophet. And he's so high, he's like, oh, yeah, sure. It'll be no problem to outrun that chariot with horses. And he just takes off running, and he just, who does that sort of thing? You gotta be in ecstasis. I'm just sharing stories of ecstasis. Or how about the entire freaking New Testament? Paul was out of his mind. Peter was out of his mind. The moments where Peter was, like, how does the entire, everything that we've experienced is the result of, like, the upper room encounter when the Holy Spirit fills and floods the disciples, right? That was simply their awareness was shifting to the reality of the Spirit. That wasn't for the apostles or the disciples. They didn't have any more of the Spirit than anyone else ever has had. They had just become aware of the Spirit in that moment. And a lot of times what happens is God divinely encounters somebody because we aren't aware. We're not coming into the awareness on our own. So he divinely encounters you, and now you're like, oh, now I can do it. Because now you have this experience that tells you something. Listen, I'm telling you, you don't have to have the experience. You can know right now and experience the knowing of the Spirit. That can be your experience. So the Spirit comes upon this group of nobodies. They're afraid for their life. They're in a locked room because they're afraid for their life. The Spirit comes upon them. What happens? Boldness. Why? Because the parts of your brain and of your mind that operate out of memory and operate out of fear and operate out of self-consciousness were absolutely diminished. They were restricted down to nothing. And the parts of your brain that operate out of boldness and creativity and power and life and love and ecstasy, and all of a sudden those things get exemplified, and all of a sudden now these men that were afraid one moment are now running out into the streets, and they're like, that's what they're doing, and they're talking in all these crazy languages. They don't even know it. They're so high, as like Austin and I were saying in Mali, if we ever get pulled over by the police, the one thing we cannot do is speak in English, you know. That's our rule. So the next time, if we ever get pulled over in Mali, riding in the van, like, we can't speak in English. So it's just you know. These guys are so out of their mind, though. They're just walking around town. They're like, shut up, Abalepe. And people are like, what is going on? But they're speaking in all these crazy tongues. And so all these different people from various regions of the earth are like, I hear my language one minute, and then I don't understand the rest. And they're all hearing various parts of their languages. There have been times where I was out of my mind. I've started praying in the Spirit. People have literally like heard the gospel in their native tongue. Like, I don't speak Spanish. I've had literally people that spoke Spanish that came up to me after various time meetings and being out on streets. Like, I heard you. Like, you literally was telling me about Jesus Christ in Spanish. Like, I had no idea. I don't speak. He was like, you speak pretty fluent Spanish. No, I don't speak any Spanish. But you just got to be out of your mind. If you're self-conscious, you don't do that sort of thing. When you're out of your mind, it just happens. Like, I didn't even know I was doing it. It was just happening. It was effortlessly taking place. It was an effortless expression of the sparkle of the divine nature of who I was always intended to be. The problem is all of those moments that I wasn't experiencing the sparkle, the divine expression, were those moments where I was caught up in my mind instead of being out of my mind. I was displaced here. Like Peter, the entire New Testament and what we experienced with Peter was because he went up on the rooftop. Listen, he didn't even like you. Peter, I know you think Peter's really awesome, but he didn't like you guys. He was completely against like the Gentiles. He was not for Gentiles. He thought you were unclean. He was like a Jew. He was like all about Jews, even though Jesus was like going to into Judea and Samaria and the uttermost parts of the earth. No, but he was all for the Jews. And he goes up on the rooftop and he goes into this trance, ecstasis, the word there is ecstasis. And he's completely out of his mind, and in this trance, a sheep from heaven comes down, and there's all these four-footed and two-hoofed creatures and all these unclean creatures coming out on this hoof, and he hears God go, take and eat. And Peter's like, in his self-righteous self-consciousness, he hears himself go, no, God, I've never done that. I would never do that to you. I'm a good boy. I would never do that. He's like, how dare you call anything that I've created unclean? And we've got these whole... See, you hear that? He was out of his mind. He comes out of that state. And now his entire perspective and perception of humanity shifted. And he began to realize all men were included in what Jesus Christ did, not just the Jews. Because how dare you call anything that I created unclean? The perception of humanity shifted in that moment. In ecstasis, you cannot be in ecstasis and think some, and you will never be in ecstasis and think that somebody is separated from you. You'll never be in ecstasis. You're in ecstasis, you enter in this euphoric state where you begin to see the unity and the union of all things. The solution for the isms, the solution for all the isms that we're experiencing politically, societally, are not to start conversing about them. The solution is ecstasis. The solution is to be out of your mind, because when you're out of your mind in that place, you see oneness. You don't see separation. When we're living in our brain here, the brain is actually comprised of two different compartments and different parts of the brain that actually cause us to actually see dualistically. In ecstasis, they shut down, literally like that's the physical representation of the veil that was torn. In ecstasis, that shuts down and you only see as one. And you start seeing all things as one. You start seeing the beauty, like you start seeing that all are included. Like Paul was, he said this, I'm so high on love. I'm so out of my mind in love. I've been absolutely convinced and persuaded. I'm so in love with humanity, and I've been absolutely persuaded and compelled by this great love. He's talking about the euphoric state of ecstasy, this euphoric state of ecstasis, this flow state. He's like, I'm so persuaded in this state. I call that the drunken state. The intoxication ecstasy. He's like, I'm so persuaded right now that if God, Christ died for one, then all have been included in Christ's death. That didn't come because he was studying the church history. That didn't come because he went to seminary or Bible college. That was revelation, not information. That was this revelatory moment that he had when he was out of his mind. All true revelation takes place there. Revelation doesn't come here. It comes here. When you live in ecstasis, revelation flows continually. When you live in your mind, you might have moments of revelation, but you got a whole lot of information, but you don't have a lot of revelation. Information will take you so far. See, information is meant to make slaves. Revelation is meant to bring freedom.